News Talk 94.9 WSJM. You are listening to Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Thursday edition of the program. I am your host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be with you. This is, of course, the show where we have longer conversations about things you may have heard about recently on WSJM News. If it's come up in our news coverage, we'll talk about it on the Our Take, only in a more extended fashion. We have longer conversations with individuals who are in the know or making things happen here in Michigan's Great Southwest. Plenty to talk about on today's program. First of all, yesterday at high schools around the country, it was big doings. There were protests going on at high schools around the country yesterday. Kids walking out to protest violence in schools. In some cases, they were calling for a gun control legislation. Well, at some schools here locally in Berrien County, they had walkouts. They did it at St. Joe High School. They did it at Lakeshore High School. There were Benton Harbor kids who walked out, Berrien Springs kids. I know in Pawpaw, they had something going on as well. So we'll hear about that with one of the students who was part of the Lakeshore walkouts on today's program. We'll hear from her about how this whole situation went down. And speaking of school safety, we'll also talk with State Representative Mary Whiteford about a program, about a new initiative in Allegan County that the Sheriff's Department there started to try to protect schools to keep them safe. The Sheriff's Department in Allegan County now sending its deputies to do regular patrols around schools. And we talked with Mary Whiteford, state rep from Casco Township last week about this. We'll hear from her again about how this this new way of addressing school safety in Allegan County came into being. Also on today's program, we'll talk with State Representative Dave Pagel about some legislation that the House recently approved to move medically frail inmates into specialized health care facilities instead of keeping them in prison. We'll talk to Rep. Pagel and see why he introduced this legislation and exactly how it will work. And then finally today, we'll talk with the Michigan League for Public Policy about Medicaid work requirements. There is talk in Michigan about implementing work requirements for individuals who receive Medicare. We'll find out why the Michigan League for Public Policy thinks that is a bad idea. On today's program, if you'd like to weigh in on something that we discussed, just send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E at wsjm.com. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Stick around and we will be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Thursday edition of the program. I'm your host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be with you. For this segment of the show, I thought we would talk a little bit about what was going on at high schools around the country yesterday. Students at high schools yesterday, at high schools all over the United States, including here in Berrien County, they staged walkouts. In many cases, these walkouts were done with the knowledge and even approval of school administrators. So these weren't exactly the rebellious sort of affairs that many of the Vietnam-era walkouts were. But these kids, they held walkouts at high schools to protest violence in schools. In some cases, they were calling for gun control. In other cases, they just wanted to call for an end to violence in schools. This, of course, all follows the incident in Florida on Valentine's Day in which 17 people were killed at a school. Anyway, these walkouts were held nationwide, including at St. Joseph High School here in Berrien County, at Lakeshore High School here in Berrien County, at Berrien Springs. They did it in Pawpaw, and I know some kids in Benton Harbor also walked out yesterday, and the slogan was, "Enough is enough." And we sent one of our reporters over there to Lakeshore High School yesterday to chat with some of the kids taking part in these walkouts. And he caught up with Annas. She is a high school senior. She was sort of the organizer of the walkout at Lakeshore. So let's hear what she had to say to reporters yesterday.
So why was it important for you to put all the effort in to make this happen?
To me, this walkout was incredibly important because I was honestly just heartbroken hearing about these families and siblings that lost their loved ones. And having a twin sister, I was thinking, what if this happened to us? We're in different classes. Like, I never know if I'm going to see her again. Like, that's just terrifying. And I don't think anybody should ever have to experience that.
What type of response did you get from your classmates? And how long did the planning process go for this for you? And what type of response did you get throughout it?
The planning process was probably 3 to 4 weeks. It was a pretty quick thing to first pull together here. There's a couple other students who were helping me out with a little bit, and I was actually pretty surprised by the response of how many kids actually participated. Very positively surprised.
How did you, can you describe the process of kind of coordinating with the administration on that?
Right, well, the way it all started is I was in my English class, and the classes were just in general talking about the subject, talking about, like, what's going to happen, because this was when it was very fresh, and my teacher was like, you should go talk to Mr. Brunner if you feel so strongly about this. And I said, okay, I'll go talk to Mr. Brunner. So, like, during that class, I went down here and I said, well, I left him a note. I said, I just wanted to talk to you about our school's participation in this walkout, and I think it's something that we should support.
What about the Parkland shooting in particular stood out to you and made such an impact? Because, sadly, we see these shootings happen all the time in our country.
Yeah, I think for me, it was just, this was one of the first times that the kids were actually knowledgeable enough, and they're like on the news, and I saw these brothers, and they were speaking about how, like, how it impacted them, how it impacted their families. And for a lot of time, like a lot of the other shootings, they were shut down pretty quickly. Like, we're like, okay, this is sad, and then we moved on. But I saw this when it kept, like, lingering, and people kept talking about it, and I was like, I don't want it to end. I want this to, like, continue to be a movement and for us to finally make a change.
You said that you were surprised with how many students turned out for this.
Yeah.
In the midst of it, even though it was freezing cold outside and, you know, pretty quick, What did it feel like to know that something you spent the last few weeks putting together came together like it did?
Yeah, I was just incredibly happy, like a little bit giddy, because I was really just hoping for a positive outcome, and it really exceeded what I had pictured. Because naturally, I hear, like, when I'm walking in the hallways, I hear more of the negative comments, but I'm just really excited how it turned out.
And we saw a couple students with you know, differing opinions out there as well. How did it feel to you to see, you know, them, to see everyone being respectful towards one another?
No, I thought it was totally awesome to have all those people out there having different opinions, but we're still able to come together respectfully. Because the goal isn't to, oh, we all need to have one opinion. It's, we need to talk, we need to unite here and figure out what we're going to do about this problem of school violence.
What do you hope the message is to all the adults in this community and across the country who see all of you guys as students stepping up? What do you want the message to be for the Michiana community?
I think this, the main message is that us as students, we are the future of this country. And it means a lot to us, anybody who is supporting us, because our only goal is to better this country and just progress forward and become stronger citizens.
All right, that was Lakeshore High School student Anna, one of the organizers of yesterday's walkout there at the high school in Stevensville, talking with reporters about why they did this, how the walkout came together. There were some counter sort of protesters, some students with a different message out there yesterday as well. They were all being very civil. You know, the kids yesterday were being a lot more civil than some of the adults that I saw on Facebook. But that's what happened at the high schools all over the country yesterday. As young people say, they're tired of these situations like what we saw in Florida last month. And so last week, there was an announcement about a new school safety initiative in Allegan County that came also in response to what happened in Florida. Allegan County Sheriff Frank Baker announced last week that his deputies are going to now start making sort of routine stops at schools around the county, around Allegan County. And maybe even stopping at the schools and setting aside some time there to do administrative work instead of doing those things at the sheriff's department. They might do things like fill out reports or something from a school just to have a regular presence there. This is an idea of Allegan County Sheriff Frank Baker. And last week we talked with State Representative Mary Whiteford about this. She is a state rep out of Casco Township, which is by South Haven. She represents Allegan County in the State House. I talked with her about how this new school safety patrol initiative came together in Allegan County, because she was sort of in the mix there when they came up with this idea. I thought we'd listen to what State Representative Mary Whiteford had to tell me about this new plan to have sheriff's deputies patrol schools in Allegan County. Let's hear what she had to say. Okay, Representative Whiteford, so you've been involved as the sheriff's department in Allegan County came up with this idea to have a deputy stop by schools. It's just as part of their regular day. They'll stop by schools and maybe walk the halls for a little bit. This is something Sheriff Frank Baker announced last week. Tell us more about how this all came together.
I had a scheduled meeting with the superintendents in Allegan County, as well as the ISD superintendent. And that person is Bill Brown. He invited our sheriff, Frank Baker, as well as Chief Hoyer from the Allegan Police Department. Prosecutor Rob Kangas was there, and Assistant Prosecutor Myrene Koch. And then we had superintendents and school board members, and just the discussion about school safety came up. And I said, look, guys, we've got things going on at the federal level. I'm part of the budget process, which takes time. What can we do to take care of our children? And Sheriff Baker stood up. He goes, well, what about this idea? And have his troopers spend time in the schools when they have downtime or when they need to do paperwork and have an increased presence in the schools, which is a huge part of our population. And let's keep them safe during the day.
All right, so the Allegan County Sheriff's Department helping to provide some security at schools. This is an innovative program. I'm not aware of any other counties doing this.
Yeah.
Are you aware
of
that?
Well, I looked at them. I said, hey, guys, we have to have a solution because that's why I got elected. I want to look for solutions. And here we are with a problem. What do you guys think we should do, men and women? What should we do? And that's when Sheriff Baker stood up and he had this idea. Hmm. It's wonderful. We can take care of our children. And like I said, one of the superintendents said, there's over 6,000 children in school at one time in our county. That's where everybody is. And Sheriff Baker said, well, that's a really good point. And he had already had a conversation with the Hopkins superintendent to have a desk set up where one of his troopers can stop in, do paperwork, have a presence, have a police car out in front. And with all the different schools and all the different troopers, it's just innovative, and it's taking care of our children. I said, you know, in Washington, D.C., they don't care about Allegan County kids the way we do. So what can we do?
Hmm.
I'm really pleased. It is very innovative, but it's so practical. We live in such silos of funding in our world. There's the education funding. There's the drains funding. There's roads funding. Well, every single dollar that goes to every single one is a taxpayer dollar. So how can we be effective and efficient and do the right thing by people? And I think it's really respecting the people of Allegan County.
Right, and Allegan County Sheriff Frank Baker says this won't cost any taxpayer money because the deputies will just sort of incorporate stopping by schools as part of their regular routines and even use some downtime there.
Yeah, so it's good. And then the kids get to see officers more often and develop relationships. And the teachers can and the principals. It's just a really positive thing. And there are children, so we need to do something about this and make them feel safe. Right now, they don't feel safe. Parents are afraid sending their children to school. Well, if they know there's a police officer arm's length away or paying attention, I mean, it will make everybody feel so much more secure.
All right. That was State Representative Mary Whiteford out of Casco Township talking with us about how they're addressing school safety in Allegan County now, the Sheriff's Department. Making an effort to have deputies stop by, she was involved in discussions that sort of led to the creation of this new initiative, which was rolled out last Friday with a sort of soft rollout. They really got it going this week. I'll catch up with the Allegan County Sheriff to ask how it's been going soon. So that was what they're doing in Allegan County to address school safety. And of course, as mentioned yesterday, there were protests at schools all over the country. There were some of those events here. It got adults on Facebook arguing with each other and being nasty. But that's what happened, and that's what was in the air around Southwest Michigan yesterday. News Talk 94.9 WSJM, this is Our Take, and right now we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk with State Representative Dave Pagel. He has recently introduced legislation that has passed the House, the State House. This plan would move medically frail inmates out of prisons and into specialized medical facilities. I had a chance to talk with State Rep Dave Pagel out of Berrien Springs about this idea. We'll hear from him next segment. If you would like to weigh in, send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E @wsjm.com. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Thursday edition of the program. I am your host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be with you. For this segment of the show, I thought we would chat with State Representative Dave Pagel. He is a Republican from Berrien Springs, and some legislation that he introduced regarding Michigan's prisons recently was passed by the State House. State Rep. Pagel's plan would create a process to move sick or frail inmates away from the state's prisons and into medical facilities. And it's passed the House in a vote of 94-14. Now heading on to the Senate, I caught up with State Rep. Pagel to chat about this plan. Let's hear what he had to tell me about moving medically frail inmates out of prisons. Okay, State Representative Pagel, so the State House has approved this plan to move medically frail inmates out of prisons. You've mentioned this plan to me before. Tell us a bit more about how it will work.
This plan allows us to move some of the very, very frail sick prisoners from a prison cell to a medical facility if through the parole process. But it's a little bit different from other paroles in that the prisoner must agree not to try to leave the facility. So as a condition of their parole, they go to a medical facility that we choose that has appropriate care for them. And we very carefully define medically frail as, you know, getting to the point where you cannot carry out a couple of the basic activities of daily living, like getting out of bed, toileting, grooming yourself, you know, just basic things. So you have to be in pretty bad shape to qualify. But the fact of the matter is we've got close to 40,000 prisoners, and some of them are getting old and dying in prison. And to bring the proper medical care to them in those late stages of life is a real burden for our taxpayers. It's $100,000, $150,000 a year for some of these prisoners. And it's just not real convenient to bring doctors and nurses and specialists into a prison cell for care. So the plan is to get some of the really extremely frail prisoners moved to a facility and have their care there. There are some side benefits of perhaps if they have family members, you know, they can partake in some of those end-of-life hospice-type decisions. Maybe you have a little more visitation possibilities. Just more appropriate care, more humane care. We know these are criminals. They've been guilty of a very serious crime if they're in prison. But, you know, at some point, this type of care for them is appropriate. We worked very closely with the prosecutors who, you know, worked hard to put these folks in prison, and we represent the victims' rights. We worked very hard with them in crafting the bills. They asked us to take some of the most violent crime committers and not have them to be eligible, so we agreed to that. We want to get some of the most frail prisoners out and prove that this concept works and that we can maintain public safety. The department must bring in an outside independent medical doctor to examine the prisoner who is being considered for this parole, make sure that they truly aren't a danger to society and they truly are frail. We allow the prosecutors then at our expense to bring in their own medical expert if they want to challenge the situation. So we've tried to build in as many safeguards for public safety as possible. And our hope is to, you know, have a little bit more humane treatment for some of these folks and also maintain public safety and hopefully save some money for our taxpayers.
Okay, so the bill passed the House by a fairly decent margin. Is there a lot of bipartisan support here?
Yes, it was 94-14, so it was a pretty strong vote. When you have these tough bills that are a little more controversial and take a lot of work, they're rarely unanimous, but we did have a very good margin with 94-14.
Right, and in this case, we could be talking about an inmate who's, what, 85, 90 years old, needs constant medical attention. What will be the point of keeping them in prison?
Well, that is the question. What is the point? You know, for one reason they're in prison is to punish them. And if they reach such a condition as this, are we really carrying out the punishment anymore? I mean, some people would argue, yes, they should never get out. They did the crime. But they certainly aren't a danger, which is another reason we put folks in prison, is to protect the public. These folks are not a danger to the public. They're not going to go to just any nursing home next to your mother or grandmother. It's pretty specialized care that they'll be going to. And the other reason we leave folks in prison for a while is to rehabilitate them, give them courses, education, counseling, that kind of thing. And that's no longer appropriate for these folks either. So It is a good question. Why should they really be in prison anymore?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so your plan to allow this goes on to the state Senate now. How are his chances looking over there? Does it look good?
I've talked to members of the committee that it will go to, the Judiciary Committee over there, and it looks like I have a very good chance of getting it through that committee affirmatively. And so then we'll go to the full floor there in the Senate. I think it would have good chances. You never know for sure, but I think it should have a good possibility, because there's a general movement towards criminal justice reform kind of across the nation. I noticed that Doug DeVos was quoted as supporting these bills and other bills towards criminal justice reform. I think it'll have a good chance of passing.
We're talking with State Rep Dave Pagel about a plan to move medically frail inmates away from prisons to medical facilities. Anything else you'd like to add?
I guess just funding-wise, you know, if a prisoner is in our system, we care for their medical care. We pay for their medical care 100% out of our general fund. And if we can pass these bills, we should be able to utilize Medicaid dollars. Mm-hmm. And the total dollars spent for their care should be less, because they'll be in a more appropriate facility. The other thing I would add is that I did really work close with the prosecutors so that they would not oppose this bill, and we made several changes to it. So I'm grateful for them for their help through the process.
Okay, did you consult Berrien County Prosecutor Mike Sepik?
I believe Michael has been opposing it. I've worked with the Prosecuting Attorney Association of Michigan, which he's a member of, and so the statewide membership has been involved. But individual prosecutors see things differently, and I respect that. Mike's a good prosecutor. He's passionate about the work that he does. And when you're on that side of the picture and you're working hard to put these offenders in prison, I don't question his motivation for opposing it, but apparently a majority of the prosecutors in the state, at least, who voted for in their association, agreed to not oppose the bill. Many actually strongly supported the bill, so that's kind of with almost any vote.
All right, that was State Representative Dave Pagel, Berrien Springs, Republican. His plan recently passed the State House. It would move certain inmates described as very sick and frail out of prisons into medical facilities. State Rep Pagel tells us it can cost more than $150,000 a year for some of these inmates to provide them with medical care in a prison. He mentioned Medicaid dollars could be used if they're moved into medical facilities. The plan passed the House 94-14, so it wasn't unanimous. But he does believe its chances are good in the Senate. According to State Rep Pagel, our own prosecutor here in Berrien County doesn't think it's the best idea. But most prosecutors, or at least the organization that represents them, has not opposed the plan. We'll see how it fares in the Senate, and we'll let you know if and when it passes the state Senate. We appreciate State Representative Dave Pagel's time for Our Take. News Talk 94.9 WSJM, this is Our Take, and right now we will take a break. When we come back, we will talk with a policy analyst from the Michigan League for Public Policy about Medicaid and a plan to institute work requirements for individuals receiving Medicaid. Spoiler, the Michigan League for Public Policy is against the idea. We'll learn about that next segment. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Time for a quick break. Stick around and we will be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Thursday edition of the program. We're almost out of here for the day. I'm your host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be with you. This is the show where we have longer conversations about things you may have heard about recently on WSJM News. If it's come up in our news coverage, it'll show up on Our Take. But in a more extended fashion, we have more time to chat with individuals who are in the know or making things happen here in Michigan's great Southwest. Speaking of things happening, earlier on today's show, we learned about the walkouts that were held at some high schools around Michigan's great Southwest yesterday. These walkouts were held at high schools all across the country as young people expressed concern about violence in schools following the most recent incident in Florida. In many cases, they were talking about gun control, which caused some adults yesterday to lose their minds. But for the most part, everyone was respectful yesterday. And we talked with the organizer of one of those demonstrations, which took place in Stevensville. Also on today's program, we talked with State Representative Mary Whiteford to follow up on school safety. She was involved in conversations that led to a new program at the Allegan County Sheriff's Department, in which sheriff's deputies now patrol the schools in Allegan County. We learned about that on today's program. And last segment, we talked with State Representative Dave Pagel about some legislation of his that would move medically frail inmates out of state prisons and into specialized medical facilities. It will save money. And that plan has passed the House. It now goes on to the Senate. To close out today's edition of Our Take, I thought we'd catch up with the Michigan League for Public Policy. They recently released a statement, a report that is, on the possibility of implementing work requirements for Medicaid recipients. This is something that would now be allowed under new federal rules. A couple of states have moved to do this already. There is legislation in Michigan as well to create such work requirements. I caught up with Michigan League for Public Policy analyst Emily Schwarzkopf to hear about what her organization thinks about the possibility of work requirements for Medicaid recipients. They're against it. Let's hear what Emily had to tell me. Okay, Emily, we're talking about a move here to require individuals who receive Medicaid to work. Tell us a bit about what sort of movement there's been on this here in Michigan.
Yep, legislation has already been introduced in the State House for Medicaid work requirements, and we're expecting legislation to be introduced in the Senate either yet this week or next week.
So the League for Public Policy sees problems here with this legislation. Explain.
Yeah, there are a couple of issues that we are concerned about related to work requirements. First off, a lot of data, including data right here in Michigan, has shown that people on Medicaid are already working, and those that aren't usually have a chronic disease or illness that prevents them from working. And we also have data that shows that having access to Medicaid makes it easier for people to keep or attain work. Mm-hmm. That's one of our major concerns. We're also concerned about the burdensome paperwork that people could get lost in the bureaucracy of state government with either trying to get an exemption or potentially turn in required paperwork. Mm-hmm. We've also already seen in some states that Kentucky has already filed a lawsuit regarding the legality of work requirements, stating that perhaps work requirements do not meet the essence of Medicaid as an insurance plan, not a jobs program.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're also concerned about the financial costs that this will have on the state in terms of implementation and also the consistent tracking of individuals who are trying to meet the work requirements.
All right, Emily. So Medicaid work requirements, there's a few other states that have attempted to implement something like this. Tell us a bit about them.
Yep. So we've seen, federal government released guidance in early January that would allow states to apply for state waivers to allow work requirements. And so far, we've seen about 10 states who have made requests to the federal government, and we've seen 3 states approved. Those are Kentucky, Indiana, and Alabama. The Kentucky waiver was approved shortly after that guidance was released from the federal government. And as I stated, there has already been a lawsuit that's been filed. We continue to watch what other states are doing with their waiver requests.
All right. What is the legality issue here? I mean, in what way would a work requirement for Medicaid be illegal?
So there are a couple of reasons why they could be deemed illegal. Mm-hmm. One of them is that work requirements create a new eligibility category, basically stating that you have to work to keep work requirements. There's also questions about administrative procedures are followed correctly, both at the state and federal levels, and those are like the major ones.
Okay, so if the state of Michigan tried to implement work requirements for people receiving Medicaid, do you think there would be lawsuits challenging it?
I mean, I obviously don't know. We hope that the legislature, we kind of released this report to inform legislators on the harmful effects that work requirements could have on Michigan, and hoping that perhaps we can have a thoughtful dialogue with them on, potentially other things that we could be working on, specifically targeting continuing to support our Medicaid program as it is right now, and also additional job training resources for individuals. You obviously can't speak to whether or not a court case would be filed until, legislation was enacted.
In terms of Medicaid recipients in Michigan, is there sort of a typical demographic that does receive health care through this program?
So Medicaid covers a large spectrum of people. For the most part, it covers seniors, children, and people with disabilities. Also in Michigan, we have our Healthy Michigan program, which covers about 680,000, what we typically call able-bodied, low-income individuals. So it is a broad spectrum of people.
All right. That was Emily Schwarzkopf, a policy analyst with the Michigan League for Public Policy, talking with us about Medicaid work requirements. Legislation's been introduced in the Michigan legislature to implement such requirements because recent guidance from the Trump administration made it possible. There have been two states, one of them Kentucky, who have already done this. It's led to legal action. The Michigan League for Public Policy is opposed to the idea, saying it doesn't make sense and may be illegal. They've issued a report on this. We have a link to their report at WSJM.com. Just Google Medicaid work requirements, WSJM, if you're interested, where we link to this policy statement that they issued. We'll see how this plays out, and we'll also watch how the lawsuit over the exact same thing in Kentucky plays out. News Talk 94.9 WSJM, this is Our Take, and one last thing to tell you about before we go to a break. Now, we've heard about the Larry Nassar debacle at Michigan State University. The former sports doctor, gymnastics doctor, Larry Nassar, recently sentenced to more than 150 years in prison for sexually assaulting hundreds of people over the years while he was a gymnastics doctor. So in the aftermath of this case, Michigan lawmakers want to ensure that things like this don't happen again and that victims in cases like this are adequately compensated. So the Michigan Senate has approved a set of bills that will change the laws that deal with sex assault victims. This happened this week. State Senator David Kinezik is one of the sponsors. He told Michigan News Network, several groups are actually opposing this legislation.
I believe the Michigan Catholic Conference is in opposition to the bill. I think that Michigan State University is leading the charge against the adoption of this legislation within the university community. We need to ask ourselves, do we want to be able to lay our heads down at night knowing that we did the right thing, or do folks want to move forward with protecting the type of behavior that was embodied by Dr. Larry Nassar?
So this legislation would allow more people to file lawsuits over sexual abuse and also extend the statute of limitations on that. So MSU is against it. The Chamber of Commerce has come out against the changes being proposed, saying it'll open the door to an increasing number of lawsuits against businesses. Nevertheless, the state Senate this week took action to approve this legislation. Senator David Kinezik told Michigan News Network that he does acknowledge there is plenty of opposition to this legislation, but he sees reason to push on.
We want to make sure at the end of the day that we give every single survivor the opportunity to seek damages and to be able to seek justice. Folks who are concerned about money and folks who are concerned about liability, those are the type of mentalities that got us into this problem in the first place.
So this Senate bill would retroactively extend the statute of limitations to sue and restrict government's abilities to claim immunity. state senators have discussed the bills for several days recently, and then they finally moved yesterday to approve it despite pushback from MSU and the Catholic Conference. There's a shocker. And also the Michigan Chamber of Commerce Democratic State Senator David Kinesic says he thinks this bill can pass the state house, and he says a lot of due diligence was put into drafting it.
I feel really confident about the fact that from the beginning, we worked with the survivors to craft this bill language. And so it's a bill package that is true to them. It's true to their wishes and the outcomes that they would like to see. And I think that it's important that we allow them to continue to be the tip of the spear in this process.
That's our Michigan lawmakers defying the wishes of the Chamber of Commerce, as well as universities and a Catholic group against this idea of changing the statute of limitations on sexual assault civil cases from 3 years to 30 years in Michigan. State Senate yesterday defiantly passing this legislation. It now goes on to the House. We'll see if the combined forces of the Chamber of Commerce and various public universities can stop it from being approved. I doubt they will be able to stop it. That's the latest out of Lansing on the Larry Nassar aftermath. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This has been another edition of Our Take. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we will talk with Congressman Fred Upton about several different issues being discussed in Washington. We'll also talk with the Berrien County Sheriff's Department because St. Patrick's Day is Saturday. The Sheriff's Department will have its eye on drivers this weekend. We'll chat with the Sheriff's Department, learn about their extra patrols planned for Saturday. We'll also talk with the Michigan Department of Treasury about tax scams and how you can protect yourself. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. That does it for another edition of Our Take. I've been your host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to have been with you. You have a fantastic rest of your day.